Welcome to the Anti-Pattern Podcast, your ticket to the revolution in digital thread technologies. Please welcome, live from Mannheim, Germany, your hosts, Christian Mucheo and Michael Fenning.
Hello and welcome everybody again to the Anti-Pattern Podcast here from Mannheim downtown. Again with me in the studio is Christian. Hello, Christian.
Hello.
Hello.
And today is our 26th episode already. It's getting harder to count. So there's a lot of podcasts already out there, and this is the 26th. And we wanted to make it today about AI again. I wanted to give you a quick update where we stand on implementing AI for our platform and for our use cases. This is today's topic. And this is not just about technology. This is what Christian is going to cover. So what is it that, you know, we have been working on in terms of POCs, in terms of what can we use AI actually for? Mm-hmm. It's also about what we think, or what came up in our discussions from an economical perspective, what can happen to the market, right? Because AI is really powerful, right? And we experienced that firsthand with what we did. So that's going to be really interesting today. So Christian, what have we been working on?
So basically, we are gathering the fruits of our work from the last year to build up a really good meta model, mm-hmm. and taking this meta model and the API as it is as a description for AIs, LLMs like Claude or whatever you want to do. And what we tried is to say, okay, dear LLM, here is how our system works. And I would like to have different things. So the first thing was that we said, okay, why modeling the data model always by hand?
Right.
Writing the JSONs by hand or making it manually via the user interface.
Yep.
So the idea was to say, okay, I need a data model for a recipe book. And the book contains recipes, and the recipe contains ingredients and so on. And combining this, so the kind or the way how the API and the meta model works, and this description, what I want, putting this in an LLM brings out a perfect JSON which you can directly bring in the system, upload in the system, and your system is configured.
Yeah, and that's actually what I find so funny about this. This model-driven idea has been around for years, right?
And absolutely.
And we feel still it's new to most. So if we compare ourselves to the old school PLM systems out there, right? Model-driven is new, right? And now model-driven is not even the coolest, you know, thing on the that we could imagine for configuring a system, right? It's even better when AI is actually creating the model just by prompting, so to say, right? Mm-hmm. And then we just import the model and you have your data model in there, right? So this is even one step further than, you know, the improvement that we wanted to bring, right?
Yeah.
So this is really, really cool.
And the cool thing is what also works is that you draw your model on a whiteboard, take a picture from it, give the picture to the LLM, including the description. And also this works. This is so cool.
Yeah, I did see that you guys have been drawing on the whiteboard. That's not in the video. We should do another video of this.
Yes, sure. Yeah.
Okay, cool.
And this is really cool to see, and we will come to the economics later on.
Yeah.
But this is rapid prototyping in a workshop, so to say.
Yeah, yeah. If you can read your handwriting, right, then anything gets easy.
I don't have to read it. The LLM has to be able to read it.
True. Yeah, cool. And then the second thing?
And the second thing is what we thought about if we can model a data model with the help of the LLM, why not also taking interface descriptions like an OpenAPI description, mm-hmm. And give that to the LLM to write more or less connectors by the LLM in seconds, in minutes.
Yeah.
And this is also something that's working out really, really good. So we did some tests on it. And again, this is all the fruit, the low-hanging fruit we are gathering now because, we have a clear meta model. We have, so many components in our system which are, which are written so generalized that we are so flexible now to bring in such information.
That it, now they play nicely together, those components.
Absolutely.
And what I found so interesting about this is, my first job was basically working at XPLM, right? And I already talked about this. And XPLM's business model was, writing, developing connectors for CAD tools, right? And in a cloud setting, this business model is, obsolete. There's, if you have another cloud native tool with a, as you said, open API definition of the interface, if the other tool has also an REST API, right, writing a connector is the easiest thing you can think of, right? Mm-hmm. If all of that is, machine readable and all that, right, that's of course the constraint, but connectors write themselves, right?
Yeah.
It's unbelievable.
Four well-documented systems, which are typically those which are made for integration.
Right.
And so every SaaS tool is able to do that. Maybe you have even older software and you have some whistle description.
Right.
That should work out too.
The
only thing is these self-built, non-documented Java applications that somebody, someone in the company built up.
Yeah, of course.
We will see how to handle them because we have also still the option to say, dear LLM, this is a request, a sample request, how this and that undocumented interface works. And so maybe as a step before the LLM builds up an OpenAPI-like description for itself at first and then write the connector.
Yeah. And you would imagine that the quality is then a little bit less than if there is a real machine readable or open API and so on, but there is a way to do it, right?
Absolutely.
Cool. So that's good. We made two videos out of this. And as we just said, maybe for the whiteboard, we should do a third one.
Yes,
or combine
definitely.
It.
Mm-hmm.
So one is already uploaded, right, in our YouTube channel. The other one is, I guess, the next couple of days I will be able to upload it. And then, so stay tuned, or, if you're interested in what we did, right, there's a, very short video that shows,
follow us on LinkedIn and you will get the video.
Yeah.
Right. And the interesting thing, and I think this is where your topic, your next topic comes into place, is these two major tasks for introducing a, let's say, a PLM system, because there was no digital thread system available in former times. These are the major tasks of introducing such a system, and that costs a ton of money.
Yeah, not just for old school PLM, but I would even say in general enterprise applications, enterprise software applications. So what I did is... first of all, for that metric or for that research that I did in terms of numbers, right, I was inspired by Ed Orner, who we already mentioned, I guess, right? I'm pretty sure he does not know us, right, because he's coming from a completely different domain. But for some reason, Instagram said it's a good idea that I should follow him and that I should watch his reels, right? And what he said in one of his reels is, which is true, and we know that by, from experience anyway, is in enterprise software, the software is not the most expensive thing, right? For every dollar you spend on the software licenses back then and now subscription, there is more dollars, let's say 2 to 10, depending on the domain and complexity, dollars to be spent for implementation, right? For customizing, for building connectors. And customizing is the first thing you said, right? Building the data model, right? As we are data-driven, this is already an influence on the UI and on the API, right? And connectors, second video, right? This will get way more cheap now, right? And my estimate, so I played around with other tools in last week, right? Where it's also about configuring by prompting, right? And my impression is this number has to drop, significantly, not just by, let's say, 10%. My estimate is 90%, right? It's getting so much cheaper to build your own connectors. Only prerequisite is you have to understand what you do. It's always a good idea, right? It's good if you understand what you do, right? You need to know what is the vocabulary, right? How you describe it. What is it that you can expect from the system? What is it that's a little bit unlikely, right? But then you're pretty well set to do this. And the numbers are actually really, really big. So if you think about what is the global market for enterprise applications, right? This is, according to ChatGPT, by the way, is $720 billion per year, right? That in other words, the sum of all revenue that's made in this market, right? And only, I have to look over the camera here, so over 30%, roughly 30% of that is just the software revenue. And the other 70%, right, is customizing connectors and consulting services, right? So people who understand the use case, right? And they build then the implementation as well sometimes, right? So 70% of that is not related to software. It's configuring, customizing, and all that, right? So in other words, that portion of the market that is just used for implementation and building connectors will drop significantly. And the question is how far exactly, right? Of course. But if there is just, you know, those tools left that don't have a well-documented machine-readable API, right? The trend is definitely going towards, you know, machine-readable APIs, right? So this will make a huge impact, create a lot of more efficiency in those projects. And that could mean for short term that the market is actually shrinking by, you know, introducing those new software tools that are actually able to be configured by prompting using AI.
The whole market.
The whole market, yeah. So this is the market that we are aiming at. Of course, from a, let's say, industrial product data perspective, right? Because we don't know CRM, right? It's not our topic, right? But this is the market we're aiming at. And I'm not so sure about consulting, to be honest. I guess consultants for, you know, the business process, for what the domain is, right? What the regulation maybe is, right? Those kind of consultants will not, you know, not that hard, at least, be hit by the AI wave, my opinion, right? I guess AI has an easier job to implement connectors and to configure data model, right? Then understanding exactly what needs to be done for a certain business case, right? That's maybe a little bit harder for it, right? Maybe that, I don't want to say it's completely impossible, right? But if someone would ask me what's the easier thing, implementing. Right? So that's the point, right? And this is what we go after. So in other words, I wanted to say that again. Customization just got 90% cheaper, right? What does that mean for the market? And it's so interesting to be alive, to be honest, right? Because this is what we have been waiting for, right? This is really, really cool.
And except that you are a implementer for
existing tools
and connectors.
Yeah, but there will be other jobs, right? And there will be other things to do. And maybe, and this is another thing that this is why I said on the short term, right? What actually happens if that is getting cheaper, more efficient, what you do there? Will that on the short term maybe lead to effect or shrink the market, right? Maybe, right? But if it's getting easier to do, maybe actually more people will start digitalizing, right? Things that are not yet digital, right? So in other words, it could then go on the midterm maybe the other way around, right? More projects will happen, right? Because it's easier, because people, the development resources are not a bottleneck anymore. Right? So that's really interesting to see. What is it going to be, right? Is it shrinking or is it just, you know, actually increasing because you do things differently now, right? That's easier. Really hard to say. But talking about things that are really easy, configuring other things, right? So we talked about data model and connectors.
Exactly. And of course, this is not the end. What we are definitely thinking about is, and what we can actually see, or what you can actually see in our system, is how to configure UI, how to configure business logic in a low-code way. And the question is, why not letting also this do by an AI?
Right. Yeah?
Why doing these tasks manually? This is exactly what you experienced last week in totally different domains, but there are already tools for other domains, which, where you configure exactly business logic and UI by prompting.
Yeah.
And
true. And you have to say we are not so special in this case, right? Because our UI is not really, really special, right? Our backend is more special than our UI. And, you know, an AI that is writing Python is, you know, for around for years now, right? It's nothing new. Yep. So that basically goes without saying, right?
Yeah, true. And the only question is who and where does the AI get the information from for the business logic, for the UI, for whatever?
Yeah.
And what I could imagine is even, and this is something we should try out as a fourth, potential fourth video in the future, grabbing the screen by using an existing tool and telling the the AI,
I want
build this in stuff. My tool.
I want the same stuff. Ooh. So we're not doing this. We first have to check with the lawyer if that's something we should do. But that's imaginable. Yeah, that's definitely imaginable.
Yeah, but not to annoy our competitors, but to help customers who have software which is discontinued.
Yeah, okay, true. Yeah, of course. Then it's probably not critical. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I agree. And then another thing is, of course, migration, right? That's maybe worth another podcast episode in the future. So how can you use AI? If you use AI to build connectors and therefore also mapping in the background, right? Of course, you can also use it for, you know, creating, you know, migration tools. Mm-hmm. Right? So another use case.
Sure. Yeah. The question is, in the end, do we need a low-code mechanism? And maybe yes, maybe in some places a human wants to be sure that this and that and that mission-critical, functional, safety-critical information is processed correctly.
This is actually the reason why I wrote down this big question mark behind a combination of no-code engine and AI, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's an architecture question, right? And it's really hard to say how things will play out. My feeling is, or let's say what people are afraid of still, and we said it as well, is the interaction with AI is not deterministic, right?
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes it worked really, really nice, and for connectors it was unbelievable, cool what happened, right? But it's not guaranteed, right? That you ask two times the same question and you get the same result, right? It's not guaranteed that happens. So, and if that's the case, from an architecture perspective, if you configure everything by itself, you say, I configure here the UI, I configure here the business logic, I configure here data model, I configure here the whatever it is, right? Then the question is that really a good idea if you want to have the stochastic interaction at every piece of the architecture, right? Or is it better to say, okay, I have my no-code engine in the core of my application, and everything it does from, you know, going from the core to the UI, from the core to the API, from the core to business logic maybe, right? Then there is an automism that is deterministic, right? Mm-hmm. And you limit the interaction that is stochastic, right? Limit that to one place, AI to the core, to the no-code core, right? Then ambiguity may be a little bit better handled, right? But that's not for sure.
Yeah, and you definitely have to differentiate. Is the AI involved in every request in the future, or is it just not deterministic how the business logic is written?
Right.
But the business logic itself, if it is written in the one or the other way, afterwards is more or less deterministic. And
also true.
With the help of, test cases while writing this business logic, I think we get to a pretty good state of business logic.
Yeah, agree. And what I've experienced is actually, even if you use such tools, you know, configuring by prompting tools, sometimes they make a mistake, happened a couple of times. And then they automatically run some, there was a fault, I tried to fix it automatically, and in my cases, it worked every time, right? So it found a way. Maybe it's then just another AI agent that is then asked, you know, is there, you know, that may be it, right? Or try some different strategy here, right? That is definitely something that I also learned over the last couple of weeks.
Yeah. And this is the same experience I did while coding, partly vibe coding the user interface. So I had two or three places in the user interface which the one LLM really did no good job and repeatedly did no good job. And in my IDE, I can say, okay, use four different LLMs for the same task, evaluate what is the best result, and take this one.
Yeah.
And this is really interesting to see how different agents benefit from each other. But that's definitely another episode on which we can talk about that.
Is it definitely another episode, and also a completely other episode is then the question. We come back to the question of how the architecture and AI play together, right? This is just an impression. As I said, this is why there is a huge question mark here, right? So we feel like it makes sense, right, to not just give an AI access to your on-prem tool and it, you know, starts configuring everything, right, or customizing, right? It may be actually the case that a no-code tool is best suited, right?
Mm.
That's to be found out, right? We don't know yet. Cool. Then, with that being said, guys out there, thank you very much for listening in. I will post the video of AdHonor again, if possible. This is Instagram. I don't have it anywhere else. I will post the link to that video as well in the comments. And hope that was enjoyable. Take care and bye-bye.
Goodbye.